Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Gospel Solutions for Families is a program that promotes gospel living amid everyday challenges and opportunities of marriage and family life. We try to find topics that are relevant to today's families. My name is Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and I am joined today by Sister Jean A. Stevens, first counselor in the Primary General Presidency. Welcome, Jean.
Hello. Thank you, Matt.
It's nice to have you here. And we're also joined with your husband, Mark Stevens. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Why don't you two tell us really quickly a little bit about yourselves and your maybe a little background in your family.
Thank you, Matt. We have five amazing children. We are empty nesters. Our youngest is a senior in the university. Three of them are married, two are single, and we have nine beautiful grandchildren.
Great. Active in family life, active in married life, active in church life too, right?
Yes, all of the above. Busy, busy.
Yes.
It's a good busy.
Mark, what are you currently doing in serving in the church?
Currently, I am a member of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, which has been one of those lifelong dream experiences that has been incredible in surrounding myself with beautiful hymns, scriptural text, and the power of music. It's been sweet.
In some ways, I know that this isn't a calling, but in some ways it has an aspect of a calling, being part of the Tabernacle Choir, because it's a little bit more than just sharing voice, isn't it?
Yes, we're set apart as musical missionaries. Our mission really is to sing the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ into the hearts of the people.
That's great. So this is a very important task as well, and that's great. We're also joined today by Lisa Richardson, who happens to be my wife. Welcome, Lisa. Why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe our background and our family a little bit?
Well, we have four children, and the oldest two are married, and we have one at the university as well, and then we are not empty nesters. We still have one, a 15-year-old. He's a sophomore in high school, and that has been, you know, a real blessing to have him at home with us. It's been very fun. We've been married 29 years and have lived in Orem, where near the university where you teach.
It's great. Tell me what you're doing in the church. How are you serving within the church?
Well, besides my most important calling, which is a wife and a mother, I'm also a visiting teacher, which I love and take very seriously. And then I teach Relief Society.
And you're a very good teacher. Sometimes I can't help but I crack that door open a little bit and listen for a little while to see what's happening there and to learn from you. So this is great. Now, one of the reasons I actually asked of what we are doing serving in the church is some people look at callings as a qualifying experience, or this is a statement of who you are. But actually, every person that comes into the gospel of Jesus Christ is given a mission. In Doctrine and Covenants section 88, it says they are given a mission for which they have been commissioned. I think that's interesting. And it also says there that they should magnify that. Then there's another component that's interesting in gospel doctrine. It's called common consent. And common consent is what most of the church members called sustaining. So we go through a process. This isn't something that we do just as a business agenda or an item for sacramenting, although sometimes it gets pretty rote. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had this, but I've noticed when we are raising our children, they get so used to hearing by the uplifted hand that they know they're supposed to raise their hand. So they all in favor and the hand goes up, and any opposed by the same manner, the hand goes up again. No, wait, we only do it one time. It's almost like it becomes reactionary. It's just almost business, so to speak. But in the gospel, when we understand the doctrine, this sustaining, this common consent experience is critical. As a matter of fact, we start to see that Joseph, he was told that he should ordain Oliver an elder, but he said, but you must wait until we have the common voice of the church. There was no church in 1829, so they wait until 1830 at that very first meeting. They do the first common consent, sustain Oliver and Joseph to be teachers and elders of the church, and then the ordination takes place. So this isn't something that we should take lightly. It's something that's really quite important. And then in D&C section 26, it says that everything that we do within the church, actually it says this in verse 2, all things shall be done by common consent in the church. Now here's an interesting line, by much prayer and faith. For all things you shall receive by faith. Now, the reason I give that kind of a lengthy introduction is today, this is something that happens in all members of the church, families especially, is we receive opportunities to serve. And we sustain members of our own family in church. We raise our hand and we say, I will sustain you, which is to give our support, help them to magnify, etc., right? And so here we do this. How does that impact families? How do we, and this is what I'd like you to help me, because you've all been serving lifelong experiences within the church in different callings, and our children have had different callings. How do we help as husbands, wives, parents, siblings? How do we help each other in sustaining? How do we sustain individuals and help them to magnify their calling without losing the very core essence of our marriage and family? What are your thoughts on this?
I had priesthood leadership responsibilities when we had a very young family. It took me out of the normal family routine a lot. One of the really sweet experiences of that was of just feeling totally sustained and supported by my sweet wife, Jean. I thought it was interesting that our children never felt like they were put upon or that they were missing something, because Jean's attitude always was that this was a blessing to our family and how grateful she was. But that made such a difference in terms of how I felt empowered to do the things that I felt I needed to be doing, because I always felt that support and that love. And she didn't, it wasn't just lip service, it was really something that she felt and communicated to our family so that it was a part of who we were at that point in time.
You know, this is important, Mark, as you're feeling your wife's support in your calling, but also as the wife supporting family in your calling as well. That's interesting.
No question.
Have you ever heard the term a bishop's widow? You know, kind of a thing as far
yes.
as a, and I think that that's tragic in some senses because it conveys an attitude of like, oh, wait a second, this is taking away. But I didn't catch that from yours. Is this concept of feeling sustained? I love the way you said that, feeling sustained and supported.
Yes.
In many ways.
Yes, no question. And again, it is part of the family experience. And so if it's kind of like, oh, well, Dad's gone again, I guess we'll just have to somehow muddle through here. That was never the feeling. It was always a sweet and a blessing and a positive experience. And that was because Jean made it so. So watching her and having that experience taught me so much about how you really do a good job of sustaining.
That's good. Jean?
Well, it brings to mind those years as he started talking. We were expecting our fourth child. It was about the baby was due in a month, and he was made the bishop in our ward. So I had all, you know, instantly, I had a brand new baby, four little children, you know. But I look back on those years, and instantly I feel the Lord's love in our lives in the most powerful way. I had always wanted to marry somebody who was a righteous priesthood holder. And I, in my heart, I could say it with all honesty to our children, we're so blessed to have a dad who is worthy and willing to serve the Lord. That's what I'd always dreamed of and what I wanted. And how sad to lose sight of that by, boy, he's not home tonight. I felt grateful, and we felt in such a absolutely important way the Lord's blessings in our lives that I will never forget. In fact, when it was time for him to be released, I can remember feeling, oh, I don't know if I want to try life without the blessings, the added measure of the Lord's Spirit and blessings that have been in our home because he was willing to serve. And it was a family experience, and it was so rich and so abundant. And the Lord made it, helped to make it that way.
That's so important. Sometimes people, when they receive callings, they think of what they're going to lose out in their relationships and or marriage relationships or family, but yet they fail to see the great blessings that come as well. I mean, and I like what you're saying. It's almost, you know, it comes time to be released from a calling or a missionary to come home. You're almost scared for them to come home because we've been blessed so richly from their service or through that opportunity of serving and helping magnify.
Well, when I think of sustaining someone, I think, I'm going to be on your team. I'm going to be, you know, a team member, a fellow disciple, a believer. And I always think, how can I make your life easier? You know, how can I help make things easy, not hard? And, you know, that first and foremost falls into, you know, your role as a husband and father. And if I'm complaining at home, that's not making your role as a husband and father very easy, those callings, let alone the guilt you could feel or something like that by leaving. So I think through sustaining, we can feel like, you know, we're a team, we're working for a common cause, and the more positive and uplifting. And I love what Jean said, that Mark's calling was a family experience.
Right.
I think that is so crucial in making any calling that you might have in the church a part of the family. For example, right now with your calling, we bear our testimonies at family night. Last Monday, it was my turn to bear my testimony, and I just had this overwhelming feeling of love and gratitude for Matt's calling and how it has blessed my life in such amazing ways. And I shared that. It's just the three of us now. It's kind of a small group, me and Tyler and Matt. But, you know, making sure that we share those feelings and experiences with Tyler and bring him to the things that, you know, we can and be a part of that, I think it's critical in making a family experience.
That's very good. You know, I can't help but think of the things that are being said here as a support and sustaining and helping each other. We can help our children in their callings, and we can help our spouses, and siblings can help each other. And maybe that's an interesting way to look at this, is if this is what we're doing, is we help others magnify, we help others fulfill their callings, and that doesn't mean fulfill other callings less. So it's not like, oh, wait a second, so you don't have to be a father anymore, or you don't have to be a mother because now you have this calling. Oh, no, actually, it's how we do this. I can't help think about Lisa helping me when I was first called to a bishop. Is I had tremendous guilt about how do I meet the needs of ward members and still meet my needs of family. And I felt like I was going to be a bad bishop if I didn't go to every woman, every call. And so you have people calling on Monday night, which we always held as a sacred family experience. And family home evening for us wasn't family home 10 minutes. It was family home evening. We're going to try to provide the opportunity where we are together doing things as far as that would be. But Lisa helped me through this, is overcome the guilt, and be able to say, I understand when the ox is in the mire, but also we came together and counseled together and said, you know what, I'll bishop after a certain time. I'll monitor calls when the kids are asleep and stuff, and then I'll put on my bishop's hat and we'll see what the emergencies are. Otherwise, we'll call you early Tuesday morning or something. Or I remember you contacting my executive secretary and says, Matt cannot interview from the following times. And he's like, excuse me? And he goes, he just can't do this because this is when our family eats dinner together. And he cannot interview on Fast Sundays from this time to this time. He's like, what? Why is that? He interviews our children every Fast Sunday. And actually, she was helping me to be able to fulfill my responsibilities as husband and father, which were very meaningful to me. But I felt this guilt that I had to give everything to my calling. And I understand in my mind what was important, but it was a guilt thing. Does that make sense?
Well, and also it was a student ward. And I thought, you know, as Matt and I talked, it was critical for these kids to watch us, you know, as a couple and parent. And we were modeling where our priorities lie. Of course, you know, a couple of hours on Sunday for dinner didn't count the other 18, you know, which is great, but this was sacred time for us. And I think that helped make this a really positive family experience because, gosh, Dad was around, you know, so it, yes. You know, it made it possible.
Yes. And you find out new bishop versus a seasoned bishop, some of those problems solve themselves if you're not available to run at the drop of the hat at every moment. And sometimes there were things that I learned from that as well.
So. Oh, that's such a good point, Mark. As a matter of fact, sometimes maybe that was the way it was supposed to be, is rather than giving up everything to be able to magnify, and that's an interesting word in itself, is what does that mean to magnify?
Yes.
Is to magnify, and we think we need to be doing more. We only have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that means we obviously can't do things less. Actually, what the Lord is saying is there might be ways here that you're actually shepherding, not necessarily doing for everyone, you know? And so that's really a good concept. While families adjust to callings, I think that we, as was mentioned, we often adjust callings. We see needs of families as well. And then it's pertinent for us in our callings to be able to adjust appropriately, make a more conscientious effort. For example, it was interesting when I received my current calling, is the reaction of our children who didn't know I was receiving the calling. So they're at general conference and we couldn't tell them. You know, afterwards, our oldest son said that our youngest son started weeping he leaned over and he just said, "Does this mean Dad will not be able to play catch with me anymore? He loves baseball." And while that was a little bit of a heartfelt experience there, and it was a good reminder to me saying, "Now, wait a second. This does not replace my responsibility to being a father nor to be a husband, and I will give my and pledge my best to all of those." But it was a reminder saying, I need to make sure that this young man doesn't feel that this just stole this opportunity, because I can do those things. Does that make sense?
Yes. When you look at the handbook, this new handbook too, that has the first chapter is family.
Oh, yeah.
I think that is so powerful, the message and really the truth that teaches, that we've got to keep our priorities straight, and we want the family to be first and foremost. But there is a way to do that, and actually it blesses and makes your family even better by serving the Lord, and it does work.
That's good.
He makes it happen.
So what would you say to people who would say, "Well, gee, I just listened to Sister Stevens tell me that this is family first experience, and this happens sometimes in the church, so maybe I shouldn't accept callings, or I shouldn't let my children serve in this because, they're so busy. They need to get into college. They're part of school life and stuff." What would you say to individuals that are taking the stance is family is first in ours, and so therefore, if we can conveniently put opportunities to serve both children and or spousal callings and stuff, what do you say to people?
I don't think you can separate them into different buckets. It needs to be all a part of the same thing.
Okay.
And callings do become sort of family projects, and it's interesting as you have different callings that happens. But, I think it's just finding a way to make it all a part of that family experience and not view it as this is taking away somehow. Just make it a part of.
Good.
I cannot even begin to imagine what our lives and our marriage would be like without what we've learned from serving in the church and doing it together. I could not do what the Lord's asked me to do right now without Mark. There's no way I could do it without him. And he has made it, from giving me blessings to a million other ways he supports and sustains me. I never knew what that would quite feel like as I have in this calling. I could never do it without him. And if you said, "Okay, I can only do what seems to be totally family and I can't say yes to a calling," you would be blocking some of the sweetest experiences and blessings the Lord had in mind that makes your family all the stronger and all the better and your marriage all the better.
There's only probably one word that I could say to that is amen. Amen. I am in full sustaining of that as far as that would be as amen.
When we talk about magnifying, I mean, it's getting larger, and growing. And I think by the service we render, we can enlarge not only ourselves by becoming more like our Savior, but our families and our mm-hmm. circumstances. And so I think serving in the church it teaches us so many things, but it's also, I think, critical. The attitude of service and giving of ourselves. And probably one of my favorite callings is being a visiting teacher. I love the idea of watch caring over our neighbors and our friends and our fellow disciples. And I can't imagine how my life would be without, the responsibility and the stewardship of doing that.
So good. Let's get a little practical on the side of, and we'll just start from what you said, Lisa, is one of your favorite callings is being a visiting teacher. How can I, as your husband, or even our children, what are some practical ways that I could sustain you and support you in your responsibilities as a visiting teacher?
Well, I think what we had talked about before is making it easy for me to go. And I think this requires confidence in each other in a marriage, knowing that I'm not going to put my visiting teaching responsibility ahead of the most important callings I have as a wife and a mother, but that we have confidence in each other that, that we both want to get that done every month. And how can I make that easy for you? How can I help? And that you have mutual confidence back that maybe I'm not going to schedule to go visiting teaching at a really inappropriate time for our family, when things might be going crazy around the house, but that I've, put that first and made sure that I knew you'd have confidence that I could go, and you'll make that easy when it's an appropriate time for our family.
Good. Mark, and you've served in a lot of different ecclesiastical callings, from bishop, stake president, etc. In what ways did you find practical ways where you felt supported or sustained? How can a spouse and or children sustain in a calling like that?
A number of things come to mind, and anything I'm doing in sustaining Jeannie is just because I watched how well she did sustaining me. So that's easy. But in a lot of ways, my most powerful tool was my sweet wife, because she is sort of the embodiment and essence of love. As you're leading a ward or leading a stake, as people feel love in every interaction you have, and it's not me, but it's my wife with me, what a powerful message that sends. So just sort of having that experience of we're in this together, and there is a feeling of love in everything we're doing. That's sort of an intangible but a huge support that I always felt, because Jean made herself available to us. She was at the functions, meetings, whatever that I was at, and she became sort of that silent weapon out there, just loving and bringing people in and giving hugs and encouragement and so on along the way.
And that's important, right? That's
huge.
That sounds like it's a supportive role, and that's actually more than just supporting role. I think that's a key
role.
Isn't
that the core of the gospel, in terms of loving and feeling that community of Christ, of being together and being one? So those little things, let alone kind of looking out for talks or messages or this story or that story. I just recently, Gene's so good at this, but our son was asked to sing at a women's conference. Well, who do you think went out and found the perfect song for him to sing? Well, it was his mother. So that's just sort of how Jean operates. She's always kind of watching what everybody else is doing and the things that they need and finding ways to supply those needs. So, Jean's just always been perfect in every single way in terms of finding ways to support, sustain, and help and give ideas and being there.
And I like the way you say it's not just a way, it's ways. And some of those can be very small, but they turn out to be very significant ways of sustaining and supporting someone to allow them to do what they're supposed to be doing.
When you feel that kind of united support from your family, I can't tell you how much I appreciate what my children do, as well as Mark, to help me in what I'm asked to do now. And I will call and talk to them and have, we'll just bounce ideas off. And they are so good to help, share. And it makes such a difference. And when you have important things to do or things that you're nervous about or whatever, and that wherever they live, they're praying for you. You just can picture them as a family. I think sometimes we underestimate what it really means to someone to have them in your prayers. It's huge.
So you're saying that even praying for individuals within their callings or responsibilities is a significant support or an act of sustaining? I think that's a critical element. As a matter of fact, from a personal note, I remember sometimes I was a young missionary serving in a foreign country and dealing with a foreign language and different cultures and having a great desire to succeed and often wondering if I would ever be successful in any way, shape, or form. I actually drew upon the sustaining power of my family. And I guess this is where it came from. I knew they were praying for me. I knew that. And you know how I knew that? Because we prayed for my older brothers when they were on a mission. Even when everyone was too tired, we were roused out of bed or wherever, as we needed to be saying our family prayers. And every prayer included to bless the missionary servants out there. And so I found great strength. I thought that was an interesting way. It was more than raising a hand in the situation, as important as that is. But really what was taking place is they were sustaining and helping me. And I felt that sustaining power. And I actually feel that quite a bit with our families today.
I remember just listening to Jean and thinking about families and about your calling before you had to speak in October conference last year. I remember you coming and saying to me, I wish my dad were here. I wish he could give me a blessing,
Because my father had passed away 3 years ago.
I remember you saying, I'm going to ask Zach, it's our oldest son, to give a blessing. And I remember, watching that experience and his effort and understanding how much this meant to his dad and how hard he was trying to get it, just right, And I just remember thinking how sweet and sustaining that was. And actually the words of the prayer were much more like a father would speak to a son.
That's so true. You know, and another side note on that one is I remember after speaking in conferences going back, and it's quite an experience, as you know, Gene, and coming back and kind of feeling a little bit numb afterwards, thinking, I hope I didn't damage the church. I hope I didn't damage my family or our presidency, etc., you know, all these feelings. And of course, the first person that I looked to when I got my seat was to Lisa, you know, and then immediately after that, I looked over to my children and blessed their hearts. They were blowing kisses and giving thumbs up, pounding their chest. And I thought, you know, as some might think that's a little irreverent as far as that goes, it was a sustaining power to saying is I knew they were praying for me, but also to be able to rejoice and to make it part of them. It was a sustaining experience that was so rich. It was a rich experience, actually.
It was such a family experience. When you're describing yours, I think about that day I had to speak in conference. And as you know, it's pretty overwhelming, and you feel such responsibility and such a desire to do what the Lord wants you to do and say, you know, give a message that will help and bless and lift. But it was overwhelming. And just in the tiniest way, Mark chose not to sing in that conference so that instead of being behind me, I could see him. And I thought, in the small ways, they can be simple, but it makes such a difference because I could see his face. And, you know, it just gave me courage.
That's so good.
And saw our children out there. And like you, they just, like your experience, they came from out of town so they could be here to actually just be in the same room and let you know how much they were supporting you. And those things are such evidence of their love and their support. And it just gives you help in unseen ways.
You know, I like the wording that you used right there. And I think that this is an important thing. We're almost out of time, but yet I love the word, give them evidence. In a circumstance of helping individuals to feel sustained, even our children, give them evidence that we're supporting them. You know, I marvel sometimes when I open the door and see young men delivering fast offerings, and sometimes they're with their fathers or an older brother who a partner wasn't available or something, and they just step in and they said, I'll support you on this one. I'll sustain you on this one. Children who receive callings they don't know how is parents sitting down saying, let me show you how this is done. Not telling them what to do, but let me show you how you can lead as a Maya Maid president or a counselor and offer passing on wisdom and help. Does that make sense?
Yes. When Jean spoke in conference, the other thing besides our immediate family, all of her siblings came down, including those who are not active in the church. But they all wanted to be there to support their sister who was speaking. And I'll tell you what, that was extremely powerful as well.
And once again, it's evidence that there's something going on here is we aren't just sustaining your calling. We are sustaining you in your opportunity to serve where you have been called. And I don't mean to make that a play on words, but I think that that's something that actually is very important to understand is, wait a second, we are supporting individuals in their quest to serve. Yes. And I just love that feeling and that notion.
I was just going to say that one of the blessings of being able to just watch, that's a part of sustaining Matt's calling, is just being able to kind of observe and watch what goes on. And I guess I'm just so motivated and uplifted as I watch from just maybe a little closer view, the auxiliaries or the apostles and those things, is their dedication to this work and their testimonies and their kindness and their, and I leave wanting to be so much more every time I'm around anything that has to do with Matt's calling, and I'm so motivated to be a part of this work. I just want to serve, and I want to be more, and I want to participate, and I want to, you know, just serve the Lord with all my heart and keep my covenants. And I guess I'm just so grateful these women that are, you know, they're wives and mothers and grandmothers, and they're, you know, putting these things on hold as they travel and things. And it's just very, very motivating to me to be more.
That's so good. I can't help but think some individuals might say, well, gee, I don't have a calling. And actually, every single member of the church has a calling. And that's why this is so important, this common consent, is we come together and we signify, not a vote where we count them up, but we raise our hand in public and say, you know what? I'm in. and I will sustain anybody in this one because I have a desire that the work will go forth. And sometimes our calling actually is, the greater part is sustaining every individual in there. And when we raise our hands, we are, and I love Harold B. Lee has talked about this, we enter into a solemn covenant with, not that person, the Lord, to sustain that person. And so as we help our children and as we help our spouses and our families in serving in the kingdom, we always have a calling to sustain those who serve, and especially our family members. And I can't help but think of things we've discussed at various times on this program of one way we can help sustain is we can counsel with those that are having a calling. We can ask counsel, how can I sustain you better? How can I support you better in this calling? We can talk to each other back and forth and say, this is a frustration. What can I do better to help here? And how can we meet the needs of our families? That becomes a critical element. But we have that sustaining opportunity, and actually we have that sustaining responsibility. George Albert Smith said, this was a long time ago, but I think that it holds true today. This was back in General Conference of 1919. I don't remember that one. But he said this, and I think this is a fitting way to perhaps bring our remarks to a close here. He says, if I understand the obligation I assumed when I raised my hand, let me just pause there at that moment, is like I said when we began this, we raise our hand and sustain our children and our spouses in a formal church setting. We covenant with the Lord that we will sustain. So he says, when I understand what we had just done, then he goes on to say, what I mean by that, he says, we will stand behind him. We will pray for him. We will defend his good name. We will strive to carry out his instructions as the Lord shall direct him to offer them to us while he remains in that position. This is not a gender experience. This is sustaining regardless. It's not just we sustain only the priest. We sustain each other as we receive priesthood. And we've all received priesthood covenants. And I just love that. Stand behind, pray, defend their good name, strive to carry out instructions as they are directed in the Lord. And I think that as we sustain, the Lord sustains us, and there's nothing better in families. Well, thank you for your comments. You're so good in being examples of sustaining and showing the blessings that come therefrom. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.